What bin Laden's sympathizers object to, as they have said again and again, is our government's propping up of an unpopular regimes in the Middle East, the presence of American troops on the Arabian Peninsula, the American government's support for the activities of governments like Russia that are hostile to the Muslim populations, and what they believe to be an American bias toward Israel. The point is not that we need to agree with these arguments, but that we need to be aware of them if we want to understand what is motivating so many people to rally to bin Laden's banner. Few people are moved to leave behind their worldly possessions and their families to carry out violence on behalf of a disembodied ideology. It is practical grievances, perhaps combined with an underlying ideology, that motivate large numbers to action. At a press conference I held at the National Press Club in May 2007, Schauer told reporters about the only thing that can hold together the very loose coalition that Osama bin Laden has assembled is a common Muslim hatred for the impact of U.S. foreign policy. They all agree they hate U.S. foreign policy. To the degree we change that policy in the interest of the United States, they become more and more focused on their local problems. That's not what a lot of our talking heads tell us on television every day, but few people are in a better position to understand bin Laden's message than Schauer, one of our country's foremost experts on the man. Philip Giraldi, another conservative and former counter-terrorist expert with the CIA, adds that anybody who knows anything about what's been going on for the last 10 years would realize that cause and effect are operating here, that essentially Al-Qaeda has an agenda which very specifically says what its grievances are. And its grievances are basically that we're over there. The simple fact is that there are consequences for our presence in the Middle East, and if we seriously want to address the terrorism problem, we have to be serious about that issue. Even Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz recognized that foreign intervention could have unintended consequences and that the American presence in the Middle East had bred hostility against our country. On May 29, 2003, Reuters reported, Wolfowitz said another reason for the invasion of Iraq had been almost unnoticed but huge, namely that the ousting of Saddam would allow the United States to remove its troops from Saudi Arabia, where their presence had long been a major Al-Qaeda grievance. In short, according to Wolfowitz, one of the motivations of the 9/11 attackers was resentment over the presence of American troops on the Arabian Peninsula. Again, neither Wolfowitz nor I have ever said or believed that Americans had it coming on 9/11, or that the attacks were justified, or any of this other nonsense. The point is a simple one. When our government meddles around the world, it can stir up hornets' nests and thereby jeopardize the safety of the American people. That's just common sense. But hardly anyone in our government dares to level with the American people about our fiasco of a foreign policy. Blowback should not be a difficult or surprising concept for conservatives and libertarians, since they often emphasize the unintended consequences that even the most well-intentioned domestic program can have. We can only imagine how much greater and unpredictable the consequences of intervention abroad might be. A classic example of blowback involves the overthrow of Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran in 1953. American and British intelligence collaborated on the overthrow of Mossadegh's popularly elected government, replacing him with a politically reliable but repressive Shah. Years later, a revolutionary Iranian government took American citizens hostage for 444 days. There is a connection here, not because supporters of radical Islam would have had much use for the secular Mossadegh, but because on a human level, people resent that kind of interference in their affairs. When it comes to suicide bombing, I, like many others, always assumed that the driving force behind the practice was Islamic fundamentalism. Promise of instant entry into paradise as a reward for killing infidels was said to explain the suicides. The world's expert on suicide terrorism convinced me to rethink this apparently plausible answer. The University of Chicago's Robert Pape, for his book Dying to Win, The Strategic Logic of Suicide Terrorism, collected a database of all 462 suicide terrorist attacks between 1980 and 2004. One thing he found was that religious beliefs were less important as motivating factors than we have believed. The world's leaders in suicide terrorism are actually the Tamil Tigers in Sri Lanka, a Marxist secular group. The largest Islamic fundamentalist countries have not been responsible for any suicide terrorist attacks. Not one has come from Iran or the Sudan.